Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here, as always, trying to cut through the noise for you.
That's the goal.
And today, we're tackling this question you hear everywhere in tech, right? Which LLM is winning the AI race?
Yeah, it's the question, it seems.
Exactly. And it kind of implies there's just one winner, you know, one model to rule them all. But, well, the sources we looked at paint a very different picture.
They really do. Our Deep Dive suggests that thinking of it as just one single race, it's an oversimplification. What we're actually seeing, it seems, is more like a set of parallel races. Mm-hmm. Each one has its own finish line, its own rules, its own way of keeping score.
Right. So that's our mission today, folks. We want to pull back the curtain on these different races. We'll explore what makes the big players unique, what their game plans are.
And playbooks, yeah.
And figure out where they actually stand out in this whole thing. Because it is incredibly dynamic. And the growth, it's just astonishing.
It really is.
I mean, think about this. The global market for LLMs was already around, what, $5.6 billion in 2024?
Yep, substantial.
But it's projected to explode. We're talking maybe $36 billion by 2030.
That's a compound annual growth rate of, between 33 and almost 37%. It's huge.
It's wild. And North America is leading the pack, holding like 32% of the revenue last year. So this isn't just some tech fad. Clearly, it's a major economic shift.
Absolutely. Reshaping industries.
Okay, so let's unpack this idea. You mentioned these parallel races. Our analysis really hammers home that success isn't just about, you know, who has the most computing power.
Right, or the biggest parameter count.
It's more about defining your own little corner of the market, your strategic niche, and owning it. So what does that look like for the big names out there? How do they find these paths?
Well, I think the crucial thing to grasp here is that each company fundamentally has a different strategic mandate. They're not all aiming for the exact same target. Mm. Their philosophies, their resources, the ecosystems they operate in, it all shapes their approach. It's less about building the single best model overall and more about building the right model for a specific job or a specific type of user.
Hmm.
Think of it like the Olympics. You wouldn't ask if the marathon runner is better than the gymnast, right? They're both top athletes, just in totally different events.
That's a great analogy. It really clarifies things. And our sources, they actually lay out these different playbooks pretty clearly. Let's start with the one everyone knows, OpenAI, ChatGPT. Our analysis labels them the generalist champion. Why that title?
Well, OpenAI really does lean into that generalist role.
Yeah.
ChatGPT is known for its versatility, right? It can do creative writing, it can code a bit, it can answer questions on almost anything.
Yeah, it's kind of the default for many people.
Exactly. And that broad appeal has given them a huge market share. The sources suggest around 60% in 2025. It's not just a number, it's leverage. It lets them set standards, influence expectations. Mm-hmm. Plus, their API ecosystem is massive. So many other apps are built using OpenAI's models. That creates this strong pull, like gravity, really defining the center of the AI market.
And they had that interesting capped profit structure initially, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Which was sort of a unique way to balance their original mission beneficial AI with needing serious investment.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can't talk about OpenAI without mentioning Microsoft.
The partnership, crucial.
Absolutely fundamental. Provides the cash, the immense computing power, and that deep integration path into enterprise software. It's a very powerful combo.
Okay, so OpenAI is the generalist shaping the market. How does Google differentiate Gemini? They obviously have their own massive reach. The sources call Gemini the ecosystem innovator.
Google's play with Gemini is all about leveraging what they already have. While ChatGPT goes broad, Gemini was built from the start to be natively multimodal.
Meaning
it's designed to handle text, images, audio, video, code all together seamlessly within the core model. It wasn't an add-on feature.
Ah, okay. Built in.
Right. But maybe its biggest selling point for a lot of users, deep integration with Google Workspace. Think AI features right inside Gmail, Docs, Sheets.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Helping you draft emails, summarize docs, generate spreadsheet formulas right where you work. Google's aim is to make Gemini indispensable, almost invisible, within that huge existing user base, making their whole ecosystem stickier.
That's a really clear contrast. So one aims broad, one integrates deep. But for a lot of businesses, especially bigger ones, a key question is trust, isn't it? Can we rely on this AI? Which brings us to Anthropic and Claude. Our sources call them the enterprise standard bearer. They're even a public benefit corporation. How does that safety focus work in practice?
Anthropic's path is definitely distinct. Being a PBC means that commitment to responsibility is baked into their DNA legally. They talk about a safety-first philosophy, even trying to spark a race to the top on safety. This isn't just talk. It means building models that are reliable, controllable, audible, that really appeals to enterprise clients, especially in regulated fields, finance, healthcare, legal, where mistakes are costly and compliance is key.
Right, where you can't afford hallucinations.
Precisely. And a direct result of this focus, they're incredibly long context windows. We're talking up to 1 million tokens for enterprise users.
1 million? Wow, what does that actually mean?
It means Claude can process huge amounts of information at once.
Mm-hmm.
Like an entire book, stacks of legal documents, maybe even a whole software code base, all in one go.
Okay, that's impressive.
Yeah, it makes it ideal for really deep analysis, complex compliance checks, tasks that need to understand long, intricate documents, stuff other models might struggle with.
That large context window is definitely a game changer for those specialized use cases. Okay, shifting gears again. Mistral AI, French startup, moving fast, getting big funding from Microsoft, NVIDIA, ASML. They're tagged as the open source challenger. What's their angle?
Mistral's strategy revolves around their open weight models. Basically, they release powerful models but with licenses that let developers download them, tweak them, run them on their own systems.
So more control for the user.
Exactly. They're aiming to win over developers by offering transparency and flexibility. It directly counters that fear of vendor lock-in you get with proprietary platforms.
Ah, okay. Avoid being stuck with one provider.
Right. Businesses can build Mistral's tech into their own infrastructure, keep control of their data, potentially lower costs long-term. It's a strong play for the developer community, appealing to folks who want agility and customization.
It's fascinating how different these strategies are. Then you have Perplexity AI carving out this niche as the research-oriented search engine. How do they stand out when there are so many general LLMs and, you know, Google search?
Perplexity is really trying to reinvent search. Instead of just links, it gives you direct answers, and this is key verifiable and cited answers.
Ah, the citations, that's different.
It is. They use something called Retrieval Augmented Generation, or RA, natively. The idea is to fight hallucinations by basing answers on specific documents it can find and then showing you where the information came from, like showing its work.
Right.
This makes it really good for factual research, academic stuff, anywhere. Accuracy and knowing the source really matters. It's tackling that AI trust issue head on through transparency.
Okay, and last but not least in this lineup, XAI and Grok. Our source has called this one the conversational rebel. It definitely seems to have it faith. Personality. What's Grok's strategy?
Grok is playing a very different game, for sure. Its unique edge is real-time access to data from X, you know, formerly Twitter.
So it knows what's happening right now.
Instantly. It has a pulse on current events, trends. But the really distinctive thing is its personality.
Mm.
It's designed to be irreverent, witty, maybe a bit sarcastic, willing to push back.
Okay.
Its strategy isn't really about pure factual accuracy like Perplexity. It's more about real-time relevance and winning that conversational mindshare, being engaging, even if it means it might hallucinate a bit more often.
Interesting trade-off.
Yeah, it targets users who value that immediacy, maybe entertainment, a more human-like chat, even if it's quirky, over absolute precision. It's definitely a bold approach going after a different kind of user.
So we've got these distinct strategies laid out, but you mentioned earlier the proof is in the pudding, right? Or the benchmarks in this case. Does one model just dominate when you look at performance numbers? Because this is where it gets really interesting for me. It's easy to assume one just wins.
But they don't.
Right. The benchmarks tell a much more nuanced story. No single model is top dog across every single category.
Exactly. And that really drives home the point. The best models totally depends on what you need it for. It reinforces that idea of segmented competition. Like if you're a student researching, maybe you want top scores and general knowledge. If you're a coder, you need programming skills. If you're analyzing financial data, math ability is key. It proves there's no single best.
Let's dig into some specifics, and the numbers really illustrate this. Take general knowledge and reasoning. On MMLU, that's a big benchmark, Claude 3.5, Sonnet, and GPT-40 are neck and neck, both around 88.7%. Llama 3.1 is right behind them.
Very close, yeah.
Switch to GPQA Diamond that tests tougher graduate-level reasoning, and suddenly the leaderboard shuffles. Grok 4 jumps to the top with 87.5%, then GPT-5, then Gemini 2.5 Pro. See? Different tests, different leaders.
It's the same pattern in programming. On Human Evil, which is about writing correct Python code from scratch, mm-hmm. Claude 3.5 Sonnet and Mistral Large 2 are standouts, both hitting 92%.
Impressive.
But then look at SWE Bench. This test solving real problems in existing GitHub code base is much more complex. Suddenly, Grok 4 is number one at 75%, followed by GPT-5 and Claude Opus 4.1.
So writing code snippets versus working in a real project, different skills, different leaders again.
Exactly. And even in math, using the GSM8K benchmark, Llama 3.1405B gets a really high score, 96.8%, with Quad 3.5 Sonnet very close behind at 96.4%. They've each found their areas to excel.
Okay, so raw scores are one thing, but what about just using them? Operational stuff like speed, cost, efficiency, that matters hugely for who can actually use these things.
Oh, massively. If we zoom out a bit, accessibility and just being able to scale these things up are becoming just as important as the benchmark scores. We're seeing models that are maybe not top performers everywhere, but they prioritize efficiency.
Making AI more available.
Exactly. Democratizing it. Look at speed and latency. Some open source models are incredibly fast now. Llama 4 Scout supposedly hits 2,600 tokens per second.
Wow, that's fast.
And Nova Micro gets that first token out in just 0.3 seconds. Mm-hmm. Crucial for chatbots feeling responsive. Quad 3 Sonnet is also very quick. These things really affect the user experience and whether you can use AI in real-time business stuff.
And cost must be a huge factor too, especially for smaller teams or high-volume use.
Absolutely. The sources point out GPT-40 Mini as being super affordable, like fractions of a cent per thousand tokens, SIR0007. That really opens doors for developers or small projects.
Compared to
something like the full GPT-4, which is still one of the pricier ones at 0.19 cents per thousand tokens, that price gap tells you they're targeting very different uses, mass market versus high-end specialized tasks.
Makes sense. And then for enterprise, you touched on handling different data types and massive info dumps.
Right. This is critical for businesses. Multimodality in those huge context windows aren't just cool tech demos. They solve real high-value business problems.
Like Gemini being natively multimodal.
Yeah, meaning it was trained from day one on text, images, audio, video, code, all mixed together, not just text with vision bolted on later. That makes it potentially better at understanding complex inputs like charts alongside reports or video with its audio.
And that context window size, how much it can remember at once. You mentioned Claude's million tokens, but Gemini 1.5 Pro.
Gemini 1.5 Pro pushes it even further, 2 million tokens. Claude's got the 200K standard, up to a million for enterprise, and Grok also supports a million.
2 million tokens. What does that even let you do?
It's mind-boggling. It means you could feed it an entire novel, or hours and hours of audio recordings, or thousands of pages of legal filings all in one go.
Okay.
It opens up analysis tasks that were just impossible before. Analyzing whole contracts, huge research papers, massive code bases, finding connections across vast amounts of information. It's a huge efficiency boost for complex knowledge work.
So we've drilled down into the models, the benchmarks, the features. Let's zoom back out. What does this complex picture mean for the overall market? It feels like there are bigger dynamics than just model versus model.
Yeah, I think what's fascinating is how those initial strategic choices like open source versus proprietary are really carving out distinct market segments. It doesn't look like a winner-take-all situation.
More like a diverse ecosystem.
Exactly. You've got this clear split. Proprietary models like OpenAI's or Google's often give you that cutting-edge performance, maybe an easier setup. But then you worry about vendor lock-in, maybe less transparency.
Right, being stuck.
Then you have open source like Mistral. More control over data, flexibility, maybe lower costs long-term. Yeah. But you probably need more in-house expertise to manage it.
So the winner depends on the organization's needs.
Completely. It depends on your specific needs, how much risk you can tolerate, your tech capabilities. There's no single right answer. It's about fit.
And it's not just the models, is it? The sheer amount of money involved, the cloud infrastructure, that seems like a huge factor in the long run.
Oh, absolutely critical. If you connect the dots, these huge investments from Microsoft into OpenAI or Amazon into Anthropic, It's not just charity.
Not kidding.
It's deeply strategic. It ties these advanced AI models directly to their cloud platforms. Azure for Microsoft, AWS for Amazon.
Ah, so using Claude on AWS makes you stickier to AWS.
Precisely. Even if the LLM itself could theoretically be moved, all the tools, the infrastructure, the operational knowledge you build around it on that cloud platform, that creates a powerful form of lock-in at the infrastructure level. Mm. It's really hard and expensive to switch.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the ultimate battle isn't just LLM versus LLM, but cloud provider versus cloud provider, using AI as a key weapon to win and keep customers for their broader services.
That's a really interesting angle. Okay, one last piece. Beyond the tech, beyond the business deals, what about trust? Ethics. As these things get woven into everything, responsible development has to matter, right?
It absolutely has to. This raises a big question about the long-term sustainability and just societal acceptance of this tech. LLMs get criticized fairly for potential bias from their training data, for being black boxes sometimes, for the risk of misuse, generating fake news, that sort of thing.
Yeah, those are serious concerns.
And Anthropic's whole safety-first approach we talked about, that's a direct strategic answer to those concerns. They're betting that building reliable, controllable, ethically-minded AI isn't just the right thing to do. It's actually a competitive advantage.
Trust is a feature.
Exactly. Trust becomes a valuable currency. Public perception, potential regulation, just earning the confidence of users and society. These will be huge factors. Technical brilliance alone won't guarantee success if people don't trust the technology.
Okay, so circling all the way back to where we started, who's winning the AI race? It's crystal clear now. There's no simple answer.
No, the analysis really makes that undeniable. There isn't one winner. Winning just means different things depending on who you are and what you need. Each player is effectively winning its own race.
Can you quickly recap those individual wins?
Sure. So very broadly, ChatGPT is winning the race for general public awareness and overall market share, kind of defining the category. Gemini is winning the race for deep ecosystem integration, especially for enterprise productivity within the Google suite. Claude is winning the race for enterprise trust and that deep analysis capability, particularly where safety and compliance are crucial. Mistral is winning the race for AI democratization, empowering developers through its open source approach. Perplexity is winning the race to build a more trustworthy search experience with verifiable cited answers. And Grok is winning the race for real-time relevance and that unique conversational engagement.
It really highlights the diversity, which leads to a final thought. Maybe as the core LLM tech becomes more widespread, almost like a utility.
Commodity, yeah.
The real lasting value shifts. It shifts to the applications, the platforms, the workflows that cleverly use these LLMs. Maybe the ultimate winner isn't the company with the best model on paper, but the one that successfully weaves its AI into the essential tools and processes we all use every day. Something for you, our listener, to think about. What stands out to you in this incredibly fast-moving, diverse landscape? We really hope this deep dive gave you some new angles to consider. Thanks for joining us.